Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, I didn't know if you were... I was going to wait to see what you're going to do.
I started the wrong one, so it is my fault. Normally, I would play the highlight one there, and I hit the wrong button.
What do you want to do here? It's up to you.
I don't know that I can get the highlight one yet. Oopsies.
Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served the Valley for decades and have done so in such a way where their customers, they're as loyal to their customers as they are to them. Tells you a lot. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So now we have Donnie Collins on to talk about the game. Now it's up to you. What do you want to do here?
No, I'm going to, I'll do the highlight at the bottom of the hour. I'll run the highlights.
You do whatever you want. I delayed a bit because I didn't know what you were going to do.
It's totally on me. This is not you at all. This is totally and completely on me. If you actually had a producer who had a clue, you might be able to have a good show. But no, you're stuck with me.
Okay, now I'd like to point out, I said none of that.
No. You did not. I used all. I was completely self-deprecating there.
Oh. Well, I hear Wakeman in the background.
Yeah. She said, do I have to do your job now?
You know what, Jen, isn't it difficult every day, bales of water up and down the Kevin Herr Hill?
Listen, I don't set the bar high, so, I mean, she'll be able to handle this.
Now, I have to give her credit, because she was the one the other day that about Stay Classy San Diego.
Yes, San Diego and Stay Classy. Yeah.
See, Jen, I was listening. All right. Let's bring in Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Donnie, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Oh, no problem, Steve.
Well, Donnie, they're all different, aren't they? There's really no two that are the same. So how did you view that as game four, especially after watching game three?
You know, I commented on Saturday going into the fourth quarter. I said, you know, we've seen, you know, 9-12, however many quarters of football we'd seen to that point, and I didn't know what to expect going into that fourth quarter the other day. I mean the defensive, I guess the one thing you could expect is the defensive line makes big plays, and you know, going into that fourth quarter, they needed to make a play. They did on the Austin Johnson fumble return, but I think there's very little settled about Penn State right now, because what you've got is a lot of, you know, a lot of injuries. You've had a different game plan almost every week. You've faced a different style of defense every week. And it's been one of those funky seasons where you're four games in, you still don't really know.
Well, and that's the next part. They'll face an offense that will be the only time they face this offense all year is the one that they have coming up, and a 180 of that the week after when they play Indiana. That's one of the glories of college football, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that they're going to play a drastic running attack. You know, they're going to run the ball 90% of the time. They're going to do it out of crazy, you know, these crazy formations that that everybody used to do, but now they're the only team that does it. And then next week you're going to see Indiana just throw the ball all over the place and try to score that way. But I don't know if they envisioned that kind of thing when they saw the schedule. But, you know, it's that's what it is. It's just, you know, that's what Penn State's dealing with. It's crazy. And there's so many injuries, you just don't know what Penn State's all about.
Right. All right. So let's use the Apollo 13 mode here. What do you have in the spacecraft right now that's good?
What do you have? Quarterback's pretty good. I thought he played a great game.
Yes, he did.
Four games, he's played extremely well. He played extremely well against Buffalo. Didn't get a lot of help. The rain didn't help him. There were some drops there. But I thought last week he was almost perfect except for those two deep balls he didn't hit. But you're not gonna hit a lot of deep. You're not gonna hit every deep ball. So I would say the quarterback's been great. Offensive line, I thought they held up okay against that pass rush there, because they were sending guys every play. I mean, they did exactly what Temple did in the first game. They were just sending a lot of rushers, a lot of exotic blitzes, and they disguised them well. But I thought they held up better against it this time. So I would say the offensive line is trending upward. Defensive line's really good, but other than that, I think there's been some inconsistencies in every phase of the game.
And what would make the spacecraft better?
Some help. Spacecraft's going to go pretty well if Barkley's going to play.
Yeah.
He's going to be healthy. I mean, obviously he's very good. Now, I don't know if, I don't want to step out on the limb and say he's the MVP of the team early on, but they certainly look like a really, really good offensive team when Barkley's on the field. And, you saw it last week, even with Lynch, even once Barkley went out and Lynch took over, they didn't have that explosive, that explosiveness. Even on that screen pass that Barkley, took for the touchdown, I'm not sure anybody else scores on that play. Maybe Ezekiel Elliott, but nobody else in the Big Ten is going to score on that play, and Barkley did. So that Penn State gets that aspect that they can get Barkley back, and what they could use is some better tackling. They could use some. They could shore themselves up a little bit. I think they could use some better tackling. They haven't done it very well, especially in the secondary. They could use some more consistency out of the receivers. They haven't been, they haven't caught a lot of catchable passes that you would consider tough catches. But I, other than that, I think that this is what you expect out of a young team.
All right. The special teams part against Rutgers, I don't know if you could play any better on special teams. This time they gave up a couple, but then they got one back on the Godwin recovery. What were your thoughts on that aspect?
Yeah, that was a mixed bag to me. I mean, you're right. I think they were set up really to have a kind of one of those games where you just didn't know. They were set up to give you what you got, because Gula, you can't punt better than Gula did against Rutgers.
No.
And you're pinning a team inside the 10 three times, inside the 20 five times. You're going to win that game almost every time, because you're dominating the field position battle. They were okay this week. I think, remember the kickoff that Julius had against Rutgers? It was just inside the pylon. Well,
yes.
He tried it again this week, and it was just outside the pylon.
Right.
They had to get the ball to us at the 40.
So that's a great point.
It's a matter of inches. But I think, again, young team, young guys, you expect some of that. But what you'd like is maybe some good punts in a game, and not five, all five of them in one game, although those five certainly helped. But yeah, I think their special teams are what I expected this year. I can't get too upset about how the special teams have played, because I didn't think it'd be consistent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This game is completely different. I mean, it's just the style is completely different. I mean, at least you've known it's been on the schedule for a long time, so you can put a lot of thought as to how to attack it. But the Army plays a style that's perfect for them. When you see this, what do you think when you watch it?
Oh, I think the Army style is fun to watch. I mean, that reminds me of growing up watching college football. They're gonna run the ball, and they're gonna do it, and just pray. You have to. I mean, the big key is always against a team like this is know where the ball is. And this is a very different offense. It's going to be very different. It's going to give a lot of teams problems, but I think it sets up well for Penn State, because this is a veteran defensive line. It's the one area on the team where I think you could look at it, and there's three of those guys are as reliable as you get, and it is reliable as you can expect. And Sickles played a great game last week too, so you might want to throw him in that mix. But I think if those guys play well, hold up the line, win the battles in the trenches, and I would certainly think they're the favorites to do so, Penn State could have some success against that. Now, if Army gets to the edges, like you know, Temple did, and like San Diego State was able to do it at times in the fourth quarter, then you have a totally different game. So, but it'll be a matter of can Army do what they really want to do against a defensive line that really is a lot better than what they're throwing up there to block.
Can you put into perspective what we watched Anthony Zettel do under the circumstances?
No, and I'm glad I can't, because it always amazes me. Like, it's one thing about athletics that you don't see it in any other profession. Like, you know, if my father, you know, my father's still alive, still very healthy, and, you know, when the time comes, I don't know if I'm going to be in a position to be able to honor him by working, and that's what Zettel was able to do, and you know, I don't think it surprises anybody who's able to play well. He was able to play as, you know, emotionally like that, and be able to lead the team in tackles, and you know, have a big, really, really big fumble recovery. But you know, it's crazy that, you know, you honor when you have a tragedy like that in your family, and you're able to honor your loved one by doing what he loved the most in the world, and watching him be able to, you know, watching Zettel be able to play a game like that. And you know, when everybody's watching him, when he's got to be perfect for his dad, and he was, that's something special. And you know, Zettel's a good enough player to do it. I mean, it takes the, you know, Brett Favre did it a couple of years ago on Monday Night Football and had one of those unbelievable games. And Zettel, for him to go out there and dominate a game like that, I think that's something he's going to remember for the rest of his life. I'm going to remember it for the rest of mine, because that was an inspiring event.
Yeah, everyone grieves in their own way, and people should respect how someone grieves, and some need to get right back out there or be surrounded by something that is natural to them. Others don't. It turns out that in that environment, he wanted to be around and be in that, and he played himself at one whale of a game.
Oh yeah, and yeah, that's the thing about it is that nobody on the planet would have blamed Anthony Zettel if he went home.
Right.
And you know, Penn State goes out there and plays their game, and you know, nobody's going to say, if they had Zettel, this would have happened or that wouldn't have happened, because of course he wouldn't have Zettel. But Zettel goes out there and I was not surprised he played, but at the same time I was kind of surprised he played, because you just never know. And to see him out there warming up and running out of the tunnel and to go up into the stands and you know meet with his family, you knew what that meant to him.
Sure.
If you weren't rooting for Anthony Zettel on Saturday, I mean, whether you're from San Diego State or Ohio State or Penn State or wherever you're from, you know, if you're not rooting for him and he's settled to have a big game, you don't have a heart, because what he went through, well, you know, not just Friday night into Saturday, but the last 3 weeks. I mean,
yes,
saying goodbye to his father for 3 weeks. I just don't know how that can't affect your play, and I don't really think it did for him. I think he went out there and was able to play for his father, and that was therapy for him. And you know, bravo to him. Let's see how much better he plays now going forward. But I can't imagine he could play much better than he's played the first three games. He's been, you know, him and Johnson and Nass have been a force up there. But you know, let's see how he uses this the rest of the way. I imagine he'll continue to honor his father by playing a very dominant style of football.
You mentioned Nass in that answer. Nass is a guy that I don't think he started in high school. I don't think he did. I think the first start he ever had in his life was the Temple game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't believe it when James Franklin said that, because that was his first start ever. It's amazing. It's a guy 6'7". You start by 6'7" accidentally in high school. You know, how many 6'7" kids? Who was better than Carl Nassib could have been accidentally in high school? But yeah, and then the next thing is you think, what a find by the paternal staff. Is one of the last great finds, I guess, that they really had was to bring him in as a, you know, Ron Vanderland, and brought him in as a, saw some potential in him, brought him in as a preferred walk-on, and he's turned into a real superstar in the league. And you know, it's not just through that. He's very steadily, you saw him play 2 years ago, didn't know who he was. O'Brien talked highly of him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you see him develop little by little. He's a guy, he's a complete player. He stops the run well. He's got a high motor. He can get after the quarterback. He's not Joey Bosa, but he's close. I mean, he's a poor man's Joey Bosa. He does that kind of work for Penn State. you know, to be able to, you know, kind of come into your own and live up to your physical capabilities and get everything out of yourself. That's a real credit to NASA and a real credit, honestly, to three coaching staff.
Yes.
To be able to take that guy and get the most out of him and relate to him the stuff that he needs to know. So it's been fun to watch him progress.
Well, it was fun for me one day when Jack Ham was there and he was talking to NASA about his major, and he asked him, and he said, what's been more difficult for you, organic or inorganic, or inorganic chemistry? And, of course, I'm standing there, you know, looking around to make sure the ball's properly inflated and things like that. Thinking, I'm out of this conversation. But that's the kind of young man that he is. He is a not only a high-level football player right now, but he's a high-level intellectual as well. And as Jack said, he says, Joanne Hamm, you're, you know, because of that, he's her favorite player. So, Donnie, don't go down the organic, inorganic road with him, okay?
No, that's way over my head.
I mean, that's beyond, okay. I'm pretty good about what yard line. Okay. But after that.
Yeah, it's. He's such an impressive guy. You know, you want your kids to grow up to be like Carl Nassib, because you know if he doesn't want, if he's got a great future, and it doesn't, might have nothing to do with football. This kid's got the brightest future maybe, you know, of anyone on the team, and they've got some NFL guys out there.
Did you ever hear the story about how he got his scholarship?
No, I never heard that one.
He forgot to pay the bill, in part probably because the bill didn't arrive. He forgot to pay the bill, and he goes in the day before training camp or something like that, and he sits down with O'Brien, and he says, because he thinks, like, okay, I'm going to be out a few days until this is straightened out. And he says, Coach, I really feel bad. And, and O'Brien looks at him and goes, what are you talking about, Carl? We put you on scholarship. That's how he found out.
Wow. I love those stories about how, because that's one of the better ones I've heard. I love those stories about how they give the guys the scholarship.
The Walker thing was a nice showcase on ESPN for Von Walker, and he's another great guy to talk to. Donnie, hey, thanks a lot. I always appreciate the time very much. See you Saturday.
All right. Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay. Donnie Collins joining us on the show as we regale you with Carl Nassib tales. See, those are the kind of stories Kevin loves. Those are the storylines that Kevin likes to get into.
Heck, that is a good storyline.
Sure. So do you want to talk to him about inorganic versus organic chemistry?
Not sure I'm able to hold a conversation there at his level.
They had a long snapper here, Emery Etter. Great guy. Okay. Aerospace engineer major. I'm sorry. I'm out of questions. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car. Picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself. And negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word. Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other options. auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915. All right, Kevin is driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
Yeah, this week we're featuring a money-making vehicle, actually, Steve. It is the Ford Connect Transit. It's available in van and wagon versions. And one of the features is the dual sliding doors on the side, so you can easily access if you're transporting people or transporting goods. And if you're transporting goods, one of the back doors have two different options. You can have the side opening doors or the hatch style door, whichever is more convenient for you. The swing out side doors, cargo doors, actually have an option to open it up to a 180 degree swing out. So what you do is you basically release the side, and then you can swing it out 180 degrees. You pop it right back in and you're ready to roll. Makes it easy to load and unload. This is a money making vehicle. And if you would like to look at a version that maybe you could make money in and be able to transport the family, maybe you want to look at the options available with the wagon style. You can see all the details at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. We'll have more details coming up later this week on Periscope and on my Facebook page. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin Herr as well.
In those vehicles.
What's that?
You know what would look great in these Sunbury Motor vehicles?
What would that be?
Wakeman. All right.
If you say so.
Tell me I'm wrong. I mean, I know you're trying to protect your turf here. I got it. So.
I have no comment on turf protection. Actually, maybe I should, talking about turf protection, maybe that's something they should look at in St. Louis.
Yeah, they set it on fire yesterday.
Here's a clue. Put a mat underneath the pyrotechnics.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hackenberg, screen, Barkley, makes one miss, 20, spins inside to the 15, to the 10, Barkley to the 5, touchdown Penn State, an electrifying touchdown run off the screen pass to Saquon Barkley. Smith back, pressure, steps up, in trouble, down he goes. Carl Nassib back at the 41-yard line.
Third and 10 at the 11, back he goes. Steps up, waits, in the middle, 5, touchdown, Godwin takes the snap, back to pass, pressure, hit, and down he goes, the ball's loose, picked up, 35, 40, 50, Johnson down the near sideline, A.J. to the 30, A.J. to the 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Penn State, Austin Johnson takes it to the house.
Scott the lone setback. Bunch near side. They pitch it to Scott. Rolls right. Wants the throw. He wants Godwin downfield. Godwin reaches up. Got it at the 15 and down inside the 15 at the 13-yard line.
All right, so what ridiculous nickname am I giving Barkley now?
Electric Say-Say. It's a combination of you calling him Electric and Matt Millen calling him Say-Say.
And what is my normal policy when it comes to giving nicknames to players?
You want to be as completely boring as possible. Is that inaccurate? I'm sorry. Maybe I misunderstood.
I don't give players nicknames.
What if they already have a nickname?
Well, like Taylor Battle was Bubby, so every once in a while we'd call him Bubby because that's what his parent, that's what his mom called
him. Right, if he already has one.
That's about it. That's about it. I'm not really going to. No. I just think that perpetuates Some sort of fraud.
Some sort of fraud.
Well, I think it's a fraud. You know, we make up nicknames for, hey, it's a nickname. I'm like, oh, for goodness sakes, got a name. But you don't like that?
I don't have any problem with it.
You think it's too boring?
No, I have, well, I... No, I did make up a nickname one time. I shouldn't say that, but it was by accident, and it kind of stuck. There was a 3-point shooter. He's actually on the Shikellamy basketball coaching staff now, but he shot a lot of threes, and his name was Matt Brown. So we just started. He just started hitting everything from downtown, and downtown Matt Brown kind of stuck. Was an accident. It wasn't like I was really attempting it.
Okay.
He was all right with it, though. I checked with him. I said, when the student section started putting up signs, I said sorry. He goes, no, it's kind of cool.
Okay. I don't usually do nicknames. It's just not me.
Well, and Christian Schlegel, his nickname is Petey, and that came from years ago when he was playing baseball. And if I remember the story, there were two kids on the team that had similar names, and the coach kept getting them confused. And he goes, "I'm just going to call you Petey," and it just kind of stuck. So we'll do that every now and then. We'll call him Petey, but that's because everybody has called him that for like 10 years.
Okay. Sure.
There's your little fun facts.
Emphasis on very. Oh, you didn't like that.
I'd put the emphasis on fun.
No, I don't know. No. I know you think I'm boring, so. That's fine.
I've never said boring.
You just said boring.
Oh, no, you're right. I have said boring. I've never said dull. That's what I was thinking. I've never said dull. Boring, okay, but not dull.
Yeah, okay. And you say I suck all the fun out of the room.
Yes, you do have a tendency to be the fun sucker, yes.
What, by telling the truth?
No, just by generally sucking the fun out of it.
Okay. Charlie Wilmoth joins us from MLB TradeRumors.com. He's also the founder of Bucks Dugout. Charlie, what do you expect to see here in the last week?
Well, the NL playoff picture is pretty much set. I think the one bit of drama left is who's going to win the NL Central, and the Pirates have a crucial series coming up against the Cardinals. They're 3 games back against them. But they hold a tiebreaker. So if they sweep this 3-game series, they'll put themselves in position to potentially win the division, which, as we saw yesterday, is a big deal because if they don't, they'll have to face Jake Arrieta in the wild card game.
Yeah, it was actually very easy for the Pirate announcers to name their offensive player of the game yesterday. It was Gregory Polanco. He got the hit. So, I mean, really, it takes all the mystery out. When you look at the Cardinals and all the injuries they've had, and now Martinez is, I mean, he is not going to pitch until the postseason, one way or the other. What kind of, A, remarkable job have they done to get here, and B, why have they been able to get here with all the injuries they have had?
It is remarkable. I think it speaks very well of the depth of their organization, that they, have some injuries in their outfield, for example, and then get such good work out of people like Randall Grichuk and Stephen Piscotty, guys who they didn't necessarily plan on being the cornerstones of their team heading into the year. I mean, I think they've got great depth as an organization. They've also done a really good job as on the pitching side. They've done a really good job with runners on base. So they've done a remarkably good job not allowing runners to score, and that's been huge for them, as they've been, a historically great run prevention team.
In the American League, how dangerous is Texas in the postseason? Because about a month and a half ago, well, of course, they made the Hamels trade, and I think many people thought, yeah, they'll make the trade for the future. They'll pair him up with Yu Darvish. That'll be a great 1-2 punch. Yet here they are in 2015. How dangerous are they, and why?
Well, I mean, they do have Hamels. I mean, that's certainly a guy who could come up really big for them. They have maybe not the greatest set of offensive weapons of any team, but they have a lot of players who can potentially hit the ball out against you. They're tough. I'm hard-pressed to explain it because I saw it pretty much the way you just described it, that the Hamels trade was really mostly just a move for next year. But they've made a big move in the AL West, and they've been helped out a little bit by the Astros, who have really fallen behind.
Right, exactly. And they have guys that have excelled in postseason. Adrian Beltre, they've got Moreland. I mean, it's not like they don't have guys that have not been in this spot before.
Right, maybe we underestimated them a little bit heading into the season, because last year they were so badly chewed up by injuries. But yeah, you know, some of those key players who were around last year are back again this year. I mean, Adrian Beltre, great veteran hitter. They have Prince Fielder, another great veteran hitter. So maybe they're more dangerous than we've made them out to be.
Charlie, we talk about MLBTradeRumors.com. So here we are heading into the final week. How closely are you watching teams that have guys that are in the final year of free agency that might not either A, get re-signed, or have the willingness to move?
I'm sorry, what do you mean by that?
How closely are you going to watch the next couple of weeks to see which guys won't get re-signed by teams, and or which ones decide on their own that they're willing to move someplace as free agents in all of this?
It's tough to say. You would think that these next few weeks would be a little bit busier than they actually typically are, that that teams might take advantage of the last couple weeks they have to negotiate with impending free agents. But often that's not really the case, that, you know, the last month or so of the season and maybe the first week of the off season aren't necessarily times when a whole lot gets done. I mean, I think one exception might be, I think Hunter Pence signed last year, signed an extension that kept him in San Francisco at around this time last year. I think Tim Lincecum was the same way. But in general, that doesn't happen all that much. So I don't think we're going to see a ton of player movement until after the offseason starts. I mean, maybe it sort of makes sense in that if a player has gotten this close to free agency already, it's probably to his benefit to go ahead and try to test it.
Yeah, because so far the only free agent that's out there that's made a move is Don Orsillo, who's leaving the Red Sox broadcast booth by force and is going to sign on with the San Diego Padres and replace Dick Enberg. So I think that's about the only free agent I know of right now in all of this that's going to make a move. The Mets have erased about, 9 years of frustration here. What do you think of them, and in particular how they've handled the Matt Harvey situation?
My impression of the Harvey situation was that it kind of took everyone off guard. It seemed like something that the two sides maybe could have negotiated at the beginning of the year. I can't really I can understand why Scott Boras would want the Mets to be cautious with him, but it seems like something that maybe could have been negotiated before and had more solidly before, because to not have him at full go throughout the entire playoffs is not good at all for them. I think in general, it's been a really exciting story for them to come up big against the Nationals. And we talked about the Rangers benefiting from the Astros falling off, that the Mets have really benefited from the Nationals not being nearly as good as we thought they would be. And the Cespedes trade for them looks just gigantic. So it's been really fun to watch them down the stretch.
He's played incredibly. He's hit well, and of course we all know he's a very good fielder to begin with. Amazing. The Dodgers with Kershaw and Greinke should feel confident on paper in any short series. Why has Kershaw not pitched as effectively in the postseason as he does in July?
You know, I haven't given that question much thought, to be honest. I think in general, when you're looking at players like that, the answer is often going to be small sample sizes. And if his record in the postseason is not so great, that's going to make him a player I'd like the team I root for to face. So, you know, I'd look for him to you know not continue that this year.
Right. Well, it's something to look at. Only that he's a power pitcher. Power pitchers succeed at this time of the year, and that's one that's been so mysterious to me. And he wants the ball. I mean, he'll go on short rest, which. That one's been a mystery. Why, when you watch Jake Arrieta, what impresses you about him?
Pretty much everything. I mean, he throws 97 with a ton of movement, with a lot more precision than he used to show. His cutter is ridiculous and very hard to distinguish from his fastball. He's generated a ton of ground balls this year, more so than he did in the past, in part because he gets so much movement on his pitches. I mean, there's really nothing not to love about him as a starting pitcher at this point, and it's very hard to see weaknesses. You really just want to hope that he has an off day or that you can wear him down a little bit and your starter can stick with him for six or seven innings and get to the bullpen.
All right, this is also appears to be, now, if it ends up being the one-game playoff, the Pirates don't win the Central Division, Gerrit Cole would get the ball. Discuss what you think about that.
Well, I mean, I think that he's the natural choice for the Pirates to start that game, and that's the way their rotation sets up, and I think that's wise. I think that in general, you know, I don't mean to diminish Gerrit Cole. He's great, and he might be even greater here in a couple of years, but right now he's not Jake Arrieta. Mm-hmm. And the frustrating thing about it to me is not only is there a possibility the Pirates are and I'm a Pirates fan, not only is it possible that the Pirates are going to have to play one game for their postseason life despite having won 98 or so games or even 100 games this season, that they're going to have to face Arrieta to do it. And you know, when you're talking about a one-game playoff, it's really not a situation where it's one full team against another full team anymore. Right. Instead, you're really just facing the lineup and the starting pitcher and a couple guys in the bullpen. So it's really just a test of 11 or 12 guys against 11 or 12 guys in a way that a full series is not. So it would be very frustrating to see the Pirates season come down to that.
Right, exactly. How do you feel about, because you play 47% of your games within the division, having a division champion as an automatic entry is obvious and makes complete sense. Because you play 53% against everybody else, would it make more sense to actually seed them 1-5 once they got in?
Yes, I think that's a good solution to the problem. So I can see what MLB is getting at in organizing things this way. They want the division races to matter. And to have so much talent in the NL Central this year, and to have really all three teams be penalized for that. Two of them are going to have to play each other in the wild card game, right. And the winner is going to have to face, you know, the winner of the wild card game, who will also be one of the best teams in baseball. Meanwhile, the Dodgers and the Mets are lesser teams. They get to play each other. I mean, that doesn't seem right. So I like the idea of just seeding them based on record once they get into the playoffs. So determine the two wild card teams and the three division winners the same way, but then once they get to the playoffs, you know, if you are a division winner and you have the worst record of the playoff teams in the National League or the American League, you should have to play the one-game playoff. Right. I think that makes sense to me.
And what would happen is that, and it, again, if the Pirates don't win the division, what would happen would be this. The Cubs and the Pirates would still play each other, but it would be a five-game series. It would be the Mets and the Dodgers that would play the one-game playoff if that was seeded 1-5. Charlie, thanks so much.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean.
It took me, 2 years for me to finally say something that made sense to you. I feel like I made progress. Charlie, thanks so much. Appreciate the time very, very much.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, Charlie Wilmuth.
MLB Trade Rumors.
MLBTradeRumors.com. And we will come back, wrap things up in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And, of course, I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And interesting, Richard Deitch on SI.com wrote a great article about how do you replace Vin Scully and Dick Enberg. With all due respect to Dick Enberg, they will replace him, who's, and Dick Enberg obviously is legendary. But Don Orsillo is going to leave the Red Sox and he's going to take the San Diego Padres job. The Orsillo situation in Boston has brought with it tremendous outrage because at midseason it leaked out that they were not going to renew his contract and that Dave O'Brien was going to move up and take the job. Well, they had a petition with 60,000 signatures on it to keep him. But they're not going to keep him. As you know, management always wins. And it turns out he is going to replace Dick Enberg with the Padres. So actually, they've replaced somebody who is outstanding with somebody who's outstanding. Scully's a different proposition. And I said that with all due respect to Dick Enberg, who's fabulous. But Scully's so identified with the Dodgers. And obviously, Dan Dickerson was part of that group that, along with Rick Riz and Bob Rathman, who had to replace Ernie Harwell, and, you know, and that didn't work out right. And it's easier when it is easier, to be frank with you, when that person in front retires. That was a huge advantage for me, obviously, because I ended up being the next person up after a legend.
Okay.
And as you well know, Kevin, how much thought did I give to replacing a legend? You know me.
There was thought?
I didn't think about it.
I'm not sure that thought would come to mind.
I never once thought about it. Never. But what made it exponentially easier for me is that he retired. It'll be easier for Don Orsillo in San Diego because Dick Enberg, on his own terms, retired. Vin Scully, on his own terms, is retiring. Ernie Harwell, Bob Prince, they were both forced out. Thus, the resentment from those who listen and watch. When you're in a situation where the person in front retires and they do it on their own terms, it makes it exponentially easier for the next person, which was the situation I was in. That's the situation with both Los Angeles and San Diego they'll have because they weren't forced out. They left on their own terms.